I'm Jeff. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm so excited to be with you all this morning. You can open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 12. In Genesis chapter 12, we're going to continue in our message series, the series that's been titled In the Beginning. It's focusing on the purpose, pain, and hope that we see in the story of this book in Genesis, a book that really answers big questions about God, questions about ourselves, and questions that we may have about the world all around us. And this week's narrative, starting in chapter 12, is a pivotal one in the biblical story. Up to this point, so much so that up to this point, in the midst of a garden, God has been working with humanity, giving us grace through opportunities of redemption. That's important to remember in the midst of these narratives in these first 12 chapters, is that things seem to get all messed up, and yet God is working through this narrative of redemption in our lives. And yet humanity continues to seek autonomy from God, and we unpack that a little bit. Autonomy is two Greek words that mean self law. So autonomy means self-law, that we are governing ourselves, that we try to often, as we heard last week, make a name for ourselves, that we show our own self-sufficiency by, in the narrative, building a tower at Babel. And like Brad said, this is considered, that story in Babel is considered to be what many theologians call the second fall of humanity. And so in the narrative, we see that God changes course again. He scatters the people and creates many nations by confusing their languages. Yet, really important here, God picks one nation. He picks one nation that he will create through one man. Does any of this sound familiar? One thing you need to know about the biblical narrative is that the Genesis narrative, chapters 1 and 2 and 3, are cyclical. They are repeated over and over and over and over again. Not just here, but all throughout the Old and New Testament, we have these moments. And so this is what God is working through, this Genesis narrative over and over again. But this time there's something different. There's a shift that's going to happen in the narrative. God is beginning kind of the long game, so to speak, with us stubborn human beings. It's almost like God is a Leafs fan and he's just relying on hope. In Genesis chapter 2. Chapter 12. Now I'm getting lip, eh? This is great. I deserve it. Let's look at Genesis chapter 12 if you've got your Bible open. It'll be up on the screen, but I highly recommend you interact with it in your hands. Listen to Genesis chapter 12. The Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land that I will show you. And I'll make you into a great nation, and I'll bless you. I'll make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse you. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." Now, these opening three verses in this narrative are extremely important. You see, this man named Abram and his wife Sarai are told by God to leave, to walk away from everything that they are familiar with. Like Abram, I need you to leave your country, leave your people, leave your family. And if you do this, Abram, if you trust me with this request that I have, I promise you three great things will happen. I'll make you into a great nation. Your name will be great. That sounds familiar to something we just read, doesn't it? And you will be blessed and be a great blessing to all the nations. And so right away, we're showing something really quite fascinating here, folks. We have a God who makes great promises, promises that can be trusted because our God is faithful. We just sang about this a few minutes ago. This is important. It's important. Remember, the nations around Abram at this time, They worship many gods. They're actually a very spiritual nation, very open to religion, but they have a lot of gods. And those gods almost always break their promises to the human people. But Abram in this story is going to have to trust God and be obedient in a really drastic way. He's literally got to live out obedience by leaving everything that he knows. Think about how hard that would be. Imagine that moment in prayer where you're like, honey, I think the Lord said we got to give it all away. And I think we have to move away from your mom and dad. Hallelujah. I'm kidding, I have great in-laws, amazing in-laws. Like, imagine what that would be like, folks. This is what's happening in this narrative. This is not just some passing moment on a whim. What God is asking Abraham to do, folks, if we put ourselves in his shoes, how many of us would actually be willing to do this? To give it all up, to leave your people, to leave your family, and to go someplace that's unknown. How many of us, now this hits home for me, would spend months asking questions to God? Okay, Lord, if you want me to go there, I'll think about it, but you need to give me some details. I need more information so that I can make an informed decision. Right? It's only the wise thing to do, right? If I just finish my MBA, then I might be able to see if I can go and do what God's asking me to do. Sorry if you have an MBA. Do you see what's happening here? Many of us, myself included, folks, we would ask a lot of questions. We would need a lot of details in order to make an informed decision. But this narrative never talks about it being an informed decision, never gives Abraham any answers. God just simply says, go, leave it all. The first promise that Abraham is given is the promise of a great nation. So God is going to give some motivations to him to go. He's going to promise to make Abram into a great nation. In verse 2, I'll make you into a great nation and I will bless you. Now, to understand this promise of a great nation, we need to understand that a nation is primarily composed of two things, really: land and people. Like, if we think about it, when someone is talking about a nation, like for instance, we live in the nation of Canada, many of us likely start thinking about land. Like I don't, I think about hockey. But many of you might be thinking about the mountains out west in BC or the coast or the red soil in Prince Edward Island. Land is a key element when it comes to a concept of nation. Makes sense, doesn't it? We tend to fence off our land. Right, lay our ground and say, this is mine. You need to stay out of that. This is my own little nation. Borders in our world seem to matter a lot because land is what makes up a nation. But how many wars have been fought over land, over borders? It makes sense, right? If we look back in history, we see that land seems to really matter to people. And so God is promising Abram land. I will make you into a nation. I will give you land and I will give you people. And so in this first verse, God is sending Abram up from the land that he is living in and knows well and into a new land. Let's jump to verse 4. So Abram went. I love that. Just that simple. So Abram went, right? There's no like discussion. There's no like deep fighting with God. We're not given any of that in the text. It literally just says, so Abram went as the Lord told him. And Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he was sent out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions he had accumulated and the people that they had acquired in Haran. And they were sent out for the land of Canaan. And they arrived there. In order to grasp the big biblical narrative, understand the land of Canaan. I believe they're going to be talking about it next week. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. There's a tree again. Another important thing to notice. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring, I will give this land." And so he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. So look at this narrative. Abram, along with his wife and his nephew and all of their stuff. So imagine this, right? There's no budget rental vehicles at this time, right? This is a real trip here. He's gonna load stuff up on animals with people, and they're gonna travel 600 kilometers away. From Haran to Shechem, it says, where he hears from the Lord when he gets there a second time. Now, in the passage when it says that God, to your offspring I will give this land, this isn't a new promise. Some people see it that way, but I don't. It's not a new promise. It's really just God clarifying what he meant earlier when he said that I'll make you into a great nation. But this promise highlights the second part of this, that a critical element of a nation is not simply land, but it's also people. And again, if you think of a nation that we live in, the nation of Canada, we quickly realize that it's not just a nation defined by diverse landscape, but it's a nation that's defined by diverse people. The many diverse people from many different places who now call Canada home. We're a country made of refugees in many ways. Many different people that now call Canada home and have someone or somehow become a bunch of crazy hockey-loving, maple syrup-eating, poutine-loving, winter-loving Canadians. That's who we are as a people. And Abram's promise from God includes a promise of offspring. Do you see it? Here's your land, and I'm gonna give you people. Well, how do you gain people? You have babies. Offspring, because the Canaanites aren't his offspring. They're not his people. What we're gonna see in this narrative is that there's many challenges, there's many barriers along the way in the midst of Abraham living out and under the promises that God has given him. Let's look at verse 4 and 5 more closely. It says, Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out for Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions he had accumulated, and the people that he had acquired, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. This text asks a lot of questions in my mind. I'm like, who is all going on the trip? Well, it gives us some of those answers. Did they mention any offspring? Because you need offspring in order to create this nation that he's talking about. But yet there's no children that are mentioned, and Sarai and Abraham don't have any kids. None of this is in the text. And did you notice also how old Abraham is? He's 75 years old. Like, I'm 48 and I can barely get off the couch. He's 75 years old and just traveled 600 miles with all of his stuff and his nephew. Now, like, I get it. It seems like it's impossible that they could possibly have kids at this age. But I mean, Al Pacino, anybody ever heard of him? Al Pacino just had a baby last year and he's 83, although he didn't have the baby. But it might be more important to realize something, that Sarai in this narrative is 66 years old. So at 75 and 66, they have no children, and they have no modern technologies that could even possibly help that along the way. Not only is there an obstacle for this promise of a great nation in terms of people, but there's also a problem of land. And so we have two challenges here. The two things that make up a great nation and a great is land and people, and Abram really has neither of those. Look again at verse 6. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the green tree of Moreh and Shechem, and at that time the Canaanites were in the land. So he arrives to where God has promised him, and there's people there. So imagine this, right? You go through Remax or another realtor. I'm not doing a like a commercial for anybody, or so just a realtor organization, helps you out, and you purchase land, and you're all excited. You go 600 miles down, you go to find this land, and there's like people living there already. Wouldn't you be like, okay, I gotta get on the phone. Something's wrong here. This is my land. What are you people doing here? And the people that are there are like, yeah, no, it's our land actually. This is what's happening in the story. There's already people living there. And so Abram would have been a little bit confused by this. Folks, you need to notice very quickly in the narrative, it just doesn't roll out in simple ways, does it? So like any good story, the plot continues to thicken. But remember, God makes great promises. And before Abram even has a moment of doubt against God, God responds, and he does so in extraordinary fashion. The text says God physically shows up. In verse 7, the Lord appeared. Like, he didn't just speak, the Lord appeared. Did you notice that? In the text, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring, I give this land. So a land that's already occupied by people. Like, think about this. The big question along the way in Abram's story is, what will Abram do with the obstacles that he faces along the way? Will he respond with faith, or will he live in fear? In this case, we read the answer to that in verse 7. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. We see that in this chapter 12, Abram starts off strong. He's doing pretty good. He says, yes, I'll go. And he goes and he's walking through this and he builds an altar and he's worshiping God. He responds to this powerful demonstration and confirmation of God's promise to him by worshiping the Lord. He builds an altar. Now, you do have to understand that an altar at that time, we don't go around building a lot of altars nowadays, but an altar at that time in ancient Israelites' time meant that people wanted God's presence near them. And so they would build an altar in order to worship God, to be in his presence. They needed an altar for that to happen. And now in this story, Abram doesn't stay here in Shechem long. Let's read verse 8 and 9. From there, he went on toward the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west. And I'm gonna say AI, because I don't know how to say that word, like AI, I don't know, ChatGPT on the east. Anybody that's better at English than me can maybe tell me how to pronounce that city, but anyway, it's I? Anyway, okay. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. Then Abraham set out and continued toward Negev. Now it's interesting here, we get a picture of Abram wandering a little bit. But if you know anything about Abram, you'll know that that's actually not abnormal. Abram is a nomadic herdsman. And so what that means is he lives in tents and he cares for animals. And so he is really, in many ways, just simply moving around his animals so that he can find food and water, good pastures for them to graze into. But there is something else that's going on in this narrative. If you also notice, he's moving through the entire land that God has promised him, from Shechem to the north to Negev in the south. He's checking out the land that God has promised him. He's scouting it. And it probably isn't looking real good, because everywhere that he goes, these Canaanite people are all over the place. But once again, at this point in the narrative, instead of choosing fear, along the way, he continues as he travels to build these different altars and to worship God along the way. How many of us, as we run into obstacle after obstacle after obstacle, turn to worship? Because I don't know about you guys, but often, and I'll just, this is a secret, don't tell anybody. But often when I run into obstacles, I go into Jeff mode, because Jeff can solve the problem, right? I got this obstacle in front of me, and I love to solve problems. I will find problems to solve. Like, I go out seeking problems to solve because Jeff can solve problems. So how many are like me, where when an obstacle comes your way, you deal with it, You, in your competency, use the gifts that the Lord has given you and you deal with it. How many of us instead turn to the Lord and ask him to deal with it? It's a fascinating question to ask yourself, isn't it? The last obstacle that you had in front of you, who dealt with it? Abram continues in this narrative to trust God through prayer that God can make this great promise a reality, even in the midst of enormous obstacles in his way. God makes great promises, and he also promises to make Abram a great nation. If we read the text, read on in the Abram story, we see that this plan, it does begin to move forward very slowly, very slightly, through the birth of a son. Now, that is a miracle in itself. We don't have time to deal with that narrative, but he does have a son. And the land piece, well, that's going to take a little bit longer, but if you read through the narrative, it does come to fruition too. But when we step back in from this story and we think about our own lives, we have a huge advantage over Abram, don't we? We have a huge advantage because we know the rest of the story, don't we? We can see how in the narrative Jesus comes and he becomes the center of the story, the entire story of Scripture. He's the center of it. And this great plan and promise of God comes together ultimately through Jesus Christ, not through Abram. But what's more amazing is that Jesus actually wants to extend this story in Genesis chapter 12. He wants to extend this story to you and I, to his church. Listen to what Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. He says, but you are a chosen people. So Abram and the Israelites become the chosen people. And what Peter's saying is you and I, us Gentiles, the people who really don't belong in any of this, well, you're actually chosen people too. You're a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into this wonderful light. Do you see how the New Testament connects the Old Testament narrative of Abraham to you and to I? Jesus is inviting you and I to be part of this promise that he's given to Abram, this great holy nation, by responding in faith, just as Abram does. And Paul, he makes this exceedingly clear in Galatians chapter 3, where he actually says that we are children of Abraham, that we are his seed. But I gotta warn you, being invited into this calling, being invited into this narrative through Christ and his death and his resurrection, it doesn't come without its obstacles. Just like Abram. So this is how we can learn from this story. Despite everything, we can choose, like Abram, to trust God. We can commit ourselves to a desire for God's presence and choose faith over fear, or we can do it on our own. We can choose self-law, autonomy, instead. Now, the next thing that we see is a great promise to Abraham is the promise of a great name. Look again at the second part of this verse. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. How many people focus on the your name great part over the blessing part? Now, I want to back up in the story real quickly here. As we looked last week at the Tower of Babel, and there's a huge difference between what's happening here in the Abram story and what was happening there. Although we hear imagery, we see imagery, right? In Genesis chapter 11, verse 4, it says, they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we'll be scattered over the face of the whole earth. You see, folks, one of the major problems in the story of Babel is that the people were caught up trying to make themselves great. to make a name for themselves. And last week, Brad reminded us, he reminded us just how easy it is for us to get caught up in this very same thing, whether it's making a name for ourselves through our work, through our possessions, through our family, whatever thing we're trying to find our identity in, we're easily led into believing that life is all about those things. And folks, there's nothing wrong with those things in and of themselves. The problem is when we seek those things first instead of seeking God. That's why God needed to step in at Babel, like Brad talked about last week, with a much needed correction and a way forward. So what's so important about the promise of a great name in Abram's story? It's that he is giving it. God is giving this name to Abram. And just like we said when we were talking about Noah, Abram is not receiving this favor from God because Abram's special, because Abram's important, because Abram is super confident. It's simply a gift of grace from God. What we see so often in the scriptures is that God honors those who honor him, who love him, who are willing to live in obedience to him. And so far, that's exactly what we've seen in the Abram story. Lots of barriers, lots of challenges. But before we start thinking that Abram is some kind of Bible superhero, which is kind of what we do to him in Sunday school, there's a bit of a wrinkle in this story. If you go to verse 10, it'll come up on the screen. I'm not gonna read it for you just for the sake of time, but we see something happen. We see a shift in the story. And so up to this point, the narrative has been about Abram responding to God through worship, through faith. He's not responding by fear. But then it says a famine happens in the land. And so Abram goes down to Egypt to live there. And Abram has a bit of a problem. It's a similar problem to what I have. He has a really pretty wife. And so Abram decides that he's gonna deal with this because he can't really trust God. Like if he goes into Egypt, they're gonna think that his wife is really attractive. And in those times, the Pharaoh, as we see in this story, is gonna just wanna take that pretty girl and make her his wife. And so then they'll mistreat Abram and they'll kill him. And so the best way to manipulate this situation, because manipulation always gets you what you want, is to lie. Now, it's only kind of a half lie because Sarai really was his half sister, which is kind of creepy and weird. But in that time, it wasn't so creepy and weird, and we're just not going to get into all of that. But it goes well and it doesn't go well, right? This famine, it seems to have broken Abram's pattern a little bit. Up until now, he's been trusting God, and now he's afraid of starving. He's afraid of death. And we start to see what decision-making looks like when you make decisions out of fear instead of faith. Because you see, when you make decisions out of fear instead of faith, well, you tell half-truths. Well, you take things into your own hands and you try to control them, and they never equal worship. Abram's human. He's human like the rest of us, and he has the same temptation of living life under self-law that we struggle with. When things get scary in life, we tend to fall into that temptation. Like they say that if you want to know what a person's really like, see how they act under stress, right? Personally, folks, I'm kind of glad that this story exists. Because early on in the Abram narrative, I was like really kind of annoyed with the guy, right? If you read this, you know, by faith he does this, and by faith he does this, and he just leaves everything, and he does this, and I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, what is this trying to tell me? There's no way anybody could ever possibly live this way. And so I'm encouraged that there's stories of brokenness, there's stories of failure, there's stories that show us that these Bible characters are not some superhero, they're actually human beings just like us that struggle with self-law, just like everybody else, and they make good decisions sometimes, and they make bad decisions sometimes. But I'm encouraged to know that even through Abram, Moses, David, you name them, everyone except Jesus has had some sort of moment of mess up in their story. And despite that, we see God loving them, God extending grace for them, God caring for them, and continuing to use them. It gives me hope for a wretch like me. Now, the final thing that we'll see in this story is God's great promise to Abram is the promise of a great blessing. Now, oh, the word blessing. What a misused, messed up word in the church in so many ways. Let's go back to our main passage in verses 2-3. You'll notice the word blessing jumps off the page as it's repeated 5 times. And we're going to help with that because we made it bold. Fancy, eh? I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. This concept of blessing is a significant theme in Scripture. Specifically, a significant theme in the book of Genesis. As I mentioned earlier, let's quickly go back to examine this promise of blessing that we first heard in chapter 1 of the book of Genesis. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it." You see, for them, God's blessing looked like what the Hebrew people called Shalom. We've talked about this. It's the finding a peace that only God's presence can bring. But then sin steps into this whole shalom picture and it interrupts things, turning blessing often into curse. But as we've already seen, God taking steps again and again and again to restore the relationships and this blessing that he's going to once again give through Abram. God chooses Abram and he promises a nation to bring blessing to the world. Think about that statement. I will make you a great nation, a great name, and you, your nation, will be a blessing, not just to yourselves. You will be a blessing to all the other nations. Think about the Canaanite people that are currently in his land. I'm sure Abram's not going, "Oh, I can't wait to be a blessing to these people." Yet, they do receive land. They do multiply as people. But that's not the fulfillment of the blessing the way the scriptures present it. Jesus is the ultimate fulfillment of the Abrahamic promise. I'll say that again. You got to fast forward in the story to the ultimate fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant, the promise that God made to Abraham is found through Jesus. Because Jesus is the seed of Abraham and through whom the promise of universal blessing will flow. In other words, his church. His church, the church of Christ, with Christ at the head, is to represent this blessing to all of the nations. We folks are called, you and I, to bless others with the grace of Jesus Christ as we announce the good news of his kingdom now and his kingdom to come. And so as we close today, let's go back to the very, very beginning of this passage in Genesis chapter 12. The story, folks, starts with something. It starts with invitation. It starts with Abram being called out of comfort, out of what is known and into the unknown. He's called to give up everything, to leave everything behind. Listen to how the book of Hebrews captures this in chapter 11. It says, "By faith, Abraham was called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance. He obeyed and he went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God." And what the author of Hebrews is referring to there is all the way into chapter 22 to 24 of the book of Revelation. You see, folks, this story teaches us something. Faith and fear don't go together. Faith and fear don't go together. Often God calls us to give up something in order to truly find peace. And Abram is a great example of faith in the scriptures. It wasn't perfect. That's so important to know and to understand. Faith isn't always perfect. You will mess it up at times. Yet, we see Abraham still building an altar and worshiping God because God's presence in his life is really important to him. God's presence and his faithful promises are given to each of us, folks, each of us through Jesus Christ, if we're willing to step out in faith and conquer our fear of failure and the unknown in order to be a blessing, to live our lives in the presence of a creator of all things. Folks, this Abraham story resonates with me really deeply. Has anybody here ever had an Abraham moment? Like that moment where you're just like at your end's wit, you know, and God just sort of shows up and calls you to do something. And the thing that he's calling you to do is totally uncomfortable, doesn't make any sense. Has anybody here ever had one of those moments? When I was younger, almost 20 years ago now, I had left ministry. So I had already been in ministry, been a youth pastor in a large church. And I left ministry because, you know, being a youth pastor in a large church, when they pay you $15,000 a year, it's pretty hard to support the two kids that you have, one with medical issues and challenges. And so Carrie and I at this time are married. We have 2 out of 3 kids. 2 of them are sitting right there. And they're little, and Julia is struggling with medical challenges. And so we're like, I gotta get a real job. Right? Like, I can't keep doing this. Lord, why did you call me into ministry in the first place? It doesn't make any sense. Like, I can't even support my family. I'm just going to go get a real job. And so I grew up in Stratford, but our family farm was on the 8th line, actually just near Elmira. And so I would go in the summers to go out to the family farm. And so I'm kind of like a city kid slash farm kid because I would spend 2 to 3 months of the year out at the farm. And so I knew how to drive machinery. I could do things. I liked big things. Right? And so Carrie's dad was a truck driver. And so I was like, I got to leave ministry. This isn't working. You know, ministry was going really well, but like financially I'm in ruins. And so it doesn't matter. Tithing's not working. That's funny because it always works. And so I got to leave ministry. And so I go and I get my AZ truck license and I go and I drive a transport truck. Imagine me driving down the road with 140,000 pounds behind me. Right? Cheering for the Leafs. And things were good. Made a good living. I was able to provide for my family and I was wrestling with God because God kept saying to me, go back to ministry. And I kept saying, ministry sucks. I don't want to go back to ministry. And then one day I'm minding my own business. I'm driving to go load a steel coil. And so I'm on the Caledonia Bypass. If any of you know where that is, if you're not from the Hamilton area, you might not know. And a car steers into my lane and hits my transport truck head on. And he died. He didn't live. The car burst into flames and I'm like stunned. I had to jump out of the truck and run down the road and there's papers going everywhere and the police are there and they're picking up papers and they're talking about me like I'm dead. And I'm standing there going, hey guys, like I was the guy driving that truck. And anyway, to make a long story short, my life was changed in a moment. And it wasn't changed in the way that I thought it would be changed. Because as a young person in my 20s, just minding my own business, there was all kinds of crazy things that surrounded this story. The person who hit me was on his way to court for committing murder on his wife. And so that's why the police were picking up all the papers because they knew who this person was. I'm completely oblivious to this. I have no understanding of what's happening. They assume that he steered into my truck to end his life. And so I'm assuming that because I'm an innocent bystander in this, that insurance will pay for my truck and they'll pay for my hurt knee. And the fact that every time I now get into a truck, I think everybody is coming at me. And so I'm struggling to even drive. I'm literally struggling to make a living with 2 young kids. And I left ministry in order to make that living. And so I'm at my end's wit. I'm fighting with insurance and I'm pretty good at fighting. and I'm fighting with insurance. I'm arguing. I'm like making a case. I got a killer lawyer. I'm doing all kinds of things going, I can't believe this is even happening. I was just minding my own business, doing my own thing. What is happening, Lord? And I was walking with my dogs and everything was a train wreck. Nothing was working. Thank goodness for family because they were able to keep us alive as I supported my family. And I'm like, Lord, what is going on? How do I fix this? What do I do? And literally, as I'm out in the farmer's field walking my dog, the Lord said to me, give it to me, Jeff. Stop trying to control it on your own. Give it all to me. Because Jeff, you suck and I'm holy. That's what he said to me. And folks, at this point in my life, I'm like, yeah, God. I had this Abraham moment where I like built an altar and I just turned to him in worship and he said something else to me. Are you gonna start being obedient to me as I call you into ministry? You see, I'd been fighting with God over that. And I was fighting with God over that because I needed to make a living for my family, because I needed to take things into my own control, right? I needed to control my destiny. But it wasn't until I gave it all up that my destiny actually changed. And here I am today. Unfortunate for you. Folks, we all have Abraham moments. We all have moments where we're called to just step out, to let it all go, to let go of our competencies and to just say, yes, Lord, I worship you. Yes, Lord, I'll give my life to you. It's probably not being a pastor, maybe it is, but like it can be in any kind of way. The big thing is, folks, if you get anything from this story, is that you can trust God's promise because he will care for us. He will take care of us. He will lead you into green pastures, the scriptures say. All he's asking you to do is rest in him, to give it all up to him. There'll be obstacles along the way. It won't be perfect. But God will be faithful. So let me ask you this morning, what do you need to get out of your way in order to experience the Lord in your life? Maybe you need to let go of control. That's hard for some of us who are really good at controlling things, isn't it? Maybe we just need to step through doorways that we don't know what's on the other side, but we can just trust the Lord and take that step of faith to function out of faith and abundance rather than fear and scarcity. Because that's what the Lord calls us to. So what do you need to let go of? What do you need to get out of the way? As we turn to worship this morning, folks, I want to just call you to ask and seek the Lord of what that thing is and ask him to remove it and take that step, that unknown step of faith.